It's expected to bring a long-needed boost to tourism in Egypt. A new archaeological museum, said to be the world's largest, will display the treasures of antiquity from the pyramids in Giza when it opens later this year. Coming up on today's Travel with Rick Steves, a tour guide from Cairo tells us what he's looking forward to for his country's tourism industry. And Cassandra Overby's back with the latest on her findings for historical walking trails across Europe. She tells us why a long-distance hike might be the best way to enjoy the spirit of the old world. It's tempting to take the public parks and green spaces in our cities for granted, but we owe a debt to Frederick Law Olmsted for insisting on the value of public spaces. His designs back in the 19th century kept a bit of the natural world within reach of American city dwellers, in places like Boston, Buffalo, Manhattan, Washington, Louisville, and Chicago. To help us appreciate Olmsted's influence on our cities, we're joined by historian Lawrence Cotton. Lawrence, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure, Rick. Great to join you.
For me, it is so fun to basically stumble onto something that I didn't realize I was appreciating, but I didn't know why I'm appreciating it so much. In public spaces, it's just something that I think many people don't realize how valuable they are. And this brilliant man who was so instrumental in that way, tell us just very briefly, what was it about Frederick Law Olmsted that distinguished his work?
To Frederick Law Olmsted, parks were not just pleasure grounds, if I can use kind of an old-fashioned term. They were fundamental to humans' experience of nature, particularly in an urban environment. Up until a certain point in the 19th century, there really weren't public parks, publicly financed parks in America. In fact, in New York City, it was a historic cemetery in Brooklyn where people went to take the airs, if you will, on a Sunday afternoon. And it was only the well-off rich New Yorkers who even did that at this bucolic Greenwood Cemetery until Olmsted designed and built Central Park.
You know, it's interesting because you go to London and you find all these lovely little parks, but you realize most of them were gated communities or gated parks for the rich landowners that circled it.
Indeed.
Olmsted understood the value of what we call forest bathing and nature RX and just wellness in nature long before anybody put a name to those things. We've just got a few minutes, and what I'd like to do is just, this is a travel show, I'm just going to mention a park or a city, and I'd love for you just to kind of review with us why we can thank or celebrate the work of Frederick Law Olmsted for that city. And let's start with Central Park in New York City.
It's much talked about, the famous lungs of the city, of course. 1857 was when Olmsted began his work on it, although some work had already been conducted even before he was appointed to his role. The greensward design is totally famous in landscape architecture circles and in park circles, a design carried out by Frederick Law Olmsted and his key collaborator at that point, British-born architect Calvert Vaux. And it's a theatrical experience, a musical experience, a symphonic sequence of spaces, to quote Central Park Conservancy founder Elizabeth Barlow Rogers, which has the pastoral elements of the Sheep Meadow, the famous Sheep Meadow, and the Ramble, the birding hotspot of Central Park, which of course is the picturesque environment. And you move from one environment to the other multiple times over. There are other such spaces in that huge park.
And it's all planned. It's nothing accidental. That was all part of the original vision.
All planned, all designed by Olmsted and Vaux.
Now, take us now to the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C.
Now, there it isn't quite as obviously the U.S. Capitol was being built before Olmsted came on the scene, and he was asked to improve the grounds, and he made some significant improvements to the grounds, particularly on the mall side of the Capitol. He built a little summer house that's still there today, by the way. But one of the key things is he switched the entrance. He switched the entrance, and Olmsted, Mr. Olmsted, created the Capitol steps that are so significant in American political culture, are they not?
And they are theatrical.
They are indeed theatrical. And that is one of Mr. Olmsted's additions and improvements to the entire edifice of the Capitol. Isn't that extraordinary?
Amazing. How about, let's go to Niagara Falls.
Well, you should look up pictures to see what Niagara Falls looked like before Olmsted got a hold of it. If I can put it rather crudely, the city fathers, the city leaders of Buffalo, after Olmsted had worked on this masterful park system there, they said, oh, we have this degraded, industrialized waterfall complex that's all been subdivided into a series of mill sites, and there's only one small natural area of the waterfall that you have to pay. It's like an amusement park, and you have to pay what was called a commutation fee to walk up and over a little bridge to get into to even get a look at the natural waterfall. And they said, Mr. Olmsted, what can you do to help us here? Olmsted led the first national campaign for scenic preservation in the history of the United States called the Free Niagara Movement. And it resulted in unparalleled legislation by the state of New York to condemn the property, to remove all the industry, to acquire the land, and to restore the waterfall as best as they could to a natural state and to create a brand new state park, the first state park in the nation, master planned by none other than Frederick Law Olmsted and Calvert Fox. And I'll just end with this for visitors who haven't been to Niagara Falls in a long time. Go there today and go out to Goat Island and the Three Sisters above the waterfall complex, all landscaped by Olmsted and Vox, and you will have a transformative, different Niagara Falls experience.
Lawrence Cotton is a filmmaker from Portland, Oregon, who produced the PBS documentary special Frederick Law Olmsted, Designing America. Last year, Lawrence helped to celebrate the bicentennial of the man who's often called the father of landscape architecture. He's with us right now on Travel with Rick Steves to take a closer look at some of the most beautiful urban parks, gardens, and public spaces that we continue to enjoy today, and they were all designed by Olmsted and his team. Hey, Lawrence, if I'm a Bostonian, why would I care about Frederick Law Olmsted?
Well, that's where he lived. He and his family members lived the entire latter part of their lives, including his sons and the Olmsted Brothers firm, headquartered in South Brookline, Massachusetts. It also happens to be a wonderful National Historic Park, Rick, in South Brookline. Mm-hmm. But it's also a stone's throw from the Emerald Necklace, a crescent of Olmsted-designed parks. It's a linear park in a crescent shape, if you will, of parks, large and small, and parkways that wind around and enclose a major section of the city of Boston, approximately 7 miles in length, from the Fens or Fenway all the way to today's Franklin Park and points in between, including notably Jamaica Pond and one of my favorite places, the Harvard Arnold Arboretum, which is just extraordinary.
You know, Lawrence, if somebody wants to do something productive with their life, what a gratifying thing to be a landscape architect and to have a lasting impact on something that is so important. And he so strongly believed in democracy in the park, you know, the social value of dedicating public land, green spaces, so people can just recharge and so people can get together and connect. I know that he had a big impact on Buffalo. Talk about Olmsted in Buffalo.
In Buffalo, that's the first integrated park system in the nation. Olmsted, and at this point, he was still working with Vox. And up to that point, individual parks had been designed, but not park systems. And here in Buffalo, an entire park system, large and small parks, all connected by parkways, not narrow green lanes, you know, narrow green strips in the middle of a busy roadway, but large linear parks that connected, like arteries and veins, all of these park-like environments. The whole idea here, the brilliant idea in Buffalo, is that to think of the city as being contained within a giant park or a system of parks so that anyone, no matter who you were, what your background is, that you could be within easy walking distance of a park-like environment and that the city of Buffalo would plan its growth around this system of parks. And it was a brilliant scenario that developed there in Buffalo in the 19th century.
You know, Lawrence, I was just up in Bellingham helping produce a video for their local tourism board. And something that Bellingham in Washington State is all excited about is that same thing, that every citizen would be within a short walk of a beautiful park. And it's just sort of a great way to contribute to the collective well-being of your community. What did Olmsted do to contribute to the quality of life in Louisville?
Same thing. It came a little later. Buffalo was first. Louisville. And by the way, Boston was also later. Mm-hmm. Boston was somewhat towards the end of his career. Louisville has an entire system of parks, and it's unheralded. Louisville, again, has an extraordinary collection of large, medium, and small Olmsted parks all throughout the city, also, once again, connected by parkways. Now, in Louisville, I think only two of the parkways are still there in any fashion, if I'm not mistaken. There's a couple of more parkways that are still in place in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. But again, gorgeous. And they are such, I got to be careful when I use the term amenity, but they are such beautiful amenities to the city of Louisville. Everyone depends on them. They've been there for a long time, and they are just extraordinary. Cherokee is perhaps the most well-known in Louisville, but there are others. There's Iroquois, there's Seneca. Yeah. They all have the native names.
You know, Lawrence, talking to you, I'm impressed by the breadth, the impact of one hardworking landscape architect, Frederick Law Olmsted. And I was even thinking about in the Middle Ages, when it was a time of building great cathedrals, a few very prolific architects were just European-wide big shots, and they would be imported from here and there and there to leave their mark on the city with these great churches. And Olmsted did that in a way that is kind of a church in itself, creating sacred places where we can commune with nature. And it had a huge impact on our society.
Larger than you can even imagine. And again, I commend you in your sensibility there, that no doubt to many, including me, many of these Olmsted parks are church-like environments. Mm-hmm. And Olmsted himself, by the way, he considered a public park a public health institution. Mm. But he not only recognized the physical health benefits, but the mental health and, I dare say, spiritual health benefits,
yes,
of immersing oneself in this kind of natural environment when you're oppressed on all sides in a busy, frenetic urban city.
And our freneticism of our urban life today is probably more than what Olmsted was even could imagine, and therefore the value of his parks is greater than he could even hope. Lawrence Cotton, thank you so much for shining a light on the work of the father of American landscape architecture, Frederick Law Olmsted. Thanks a lot, Lawrence, and I feel like heading out to a park right now.
Thank you, Rick, for the opportunity to continue my evangelism.
Yeah, all right. Amen.
There's a few more lonesome cities that I'd like to see while the wine of wanderlust is still inside of me.
Historian Lawrence Cotton tells us about the Olmsted family's design work on the University of Washington campus in Seattle, where they lined up an elegant fountain with a dramatic view of snow-capped Mount Rainier. That's in an extra to today's interview at ricksteves.com/radio. They're anticipating a big jump in tourism to Egypt before long. We'll hear why in just a bit. But first, we get fresh ideas for hiking across Europe. It's Travel with Rick Steves.